Hello, this is New Books in Photography. I'm Lorena Turner, one of the hosts of the channel. I'm a lecturer in the communication department at the California State Polytechnic University in Pomona, California, and I'm also a project-based photographer. Today, I'll be speaking with photographer and writer John Neal about his book, Focus in Photography, Master the Advanced Techniques That Will Change Your Photography Forever. Focus in Photography is John's second book. His first book, Rethinking Digital Photography, was named one of the best of 2011 by the Library Journal and was also selected as one of the top 11 bestsellers of 2011 by Sterling Pix Books. Focus in Photography draws on John's authority as a photography technician and is designed to be a resource to give the reader a comprehensive understanding of optics and what actually happens to light within the camera. Not only did John write the book, but it's illustrated with his own images. John was trained as a fine artist and spent much of his career working at Kodak during the transition from film photography to digital image making. He has a fascinating connection to photography as both an inventor and an artist. And in our discussion, John and I talk about his book as well as his time at Kodak in the late 1980s and 90s when he was tasked with considering new ways in which photography could be used and applied in their consumers' daily lives.
I was hired by Kodak after I worked for another company that was owned by Kodak called Light Valve Technology. And Light Valve Technology was early on a digital process. It was a digital film recorder. Digital film recorders were used back in the day to record images that had been modified, let's say, in Photoshop or some other program, and then output to a print format. And a lot of professional photographers were using it so that they could get the best prints possible, best images possible, sort of what we do today with the output for inkjet. Mm-hmm. So I worked for them for a couple of years and learned how to use the light valve technology, which was a competition actually to a Kodak product. So eventually Kodak brought LVT back into Kodak, and we became Kodak employees. So for a number of years, I was training, going to places and teaching people how to use digital technology, specifically the LVT, but also Photoshop and Macintosh computers, that kind of thing. So I started off working within the technological area of Kodak. Actually, I was in an area called Kodak Professional and worked out of a lab that was set up specifically for showing clients, Kodak clients, how to use the equipment. So in some ways, I was a trainer, but I had access to all these different toys and whatnot. So I was able to learn a lot about digital technology. Early digital technology was very different from what it is today. It was very slow. The computers were slow. The hard drives were like 40 megabytes. Wow. At the time. An image size, typical image size would have been about a meg. I tried to push the envelope a bit and tried to push things to maybe, you know, 20 megabytes. Which meant that I would have to scan a fairly large file. That file took forever to scan back into the computer, or to print or anything else I wanted to do. So it would take me most of a day to get a small one or two or maybe 10 megabyte file. We don't even talk about megabytes anymore, hardly. We talk about megapixels and that sort of thing. So, But in the early days, it was really about having a little bit of patience, actually having quite a lot of patience. But we were so excited about what was happening at the time that we endured. So anyway, I worked for Kodak, and eventually I ended up moving laterally into another position in the design group in Kodak. It was, you know, it was a company or sort of part of the company called Corporate Design. And I ended up learning what I could to work within an environment that was a little alien to me because I wasn't trained as a designer. I was trained as a fine art photographer, and but I knew the computer. I knew some programs like Photoshop and a little bit about Illustrator. So I kind of created my own position within this design group and ended up working with engineers that were working on new ideas. So what I did for them was I helped to illustrate the concepts that they were coming up with. Actually, I should say the concepts that we were coming up with, because I had a hand in a lot of the ideas that were presented to marketing and management and that kind of thing. So, in fact, I have a number of patents that are around digital imaging. Later on, I hope to talk a little bit about the things that brought me to that point and what I learned through light valve technology and that sort of thing.
When you say that you were kind of illustrating some of the concept, what does that mean exactly?
Well, I stepped forward probably just a little bit, in making that statement, because while I was in the design center at Kodak, I started learning how to use Illustrator and various other pieces of software. Later on, I was assigned to a different department, although I was still working under design, but the new department was called Systems Concept Center. And that area allowed me to work with engineers and other people, and we ended up creating a lot of the newer things, newer ideas and products and whatnot that Kodak came up with. A lot of what we did was called Blue Sky. Blue Sky was thinking ahead 4, 5, 10 years as to what might be possible. And so it gave us an opportunity to do just about anything. And it didn't even matter that it was whether or not it was had anything to do with photography. What mattered was that it was going to have something to do with imaging. And so we were allowed to think outside the box in ways that would allow us to maybe come up with ideas for cars, for house in home use, for just about anything. Many of those products are out in the market now. Yeah, and a lot of those things were ideas that we had been talking about at Kodak. We had actually created patents around and that sort of thing. So,
wow, that's exciting.
It was kind of exciting. I mean, it wasn't the kind of work. I'm a fine art photographer, and I think in a different level, and I was working within the structure of a corporation, and that kind of goes against my grain, you know. But at the same time, I learned a lot. And the reason why I wanted to mention Kodak and what I was doing was because I wanted to bring that to as sort of the reason why my book came about.
You have another book that came out before Focus in Photography?
Yes, that book was called Rethinking Digital Photography.
There we go.
And again, I probably need to talk a little bit more about what I was doing at Kodak. The things that I was working on allowed me to use a lot of different kinds of software. And Kodak even sent me off to Rochester Institute of Technology and other places so that I could learn how to do such things as 3D imaging. I was very interested in doing things like with sound, and I wanted to do things that would be useful to people possibly in the future. That actually, if you look around now, you'll see a lot of that technology, touch technology, and all of those things were not in play back in the time that I was at Kodak. They were just new ideas that we were working with and or on. MIT and Carnegie Mellon and Stanford and a few other places were doing some really interesting, I think they call it the HIT Lab out in at Stanford. And they were doing some interesting things with technology, and we were trying to follow a lot of that. And what that did is it helped us to come up with new ideas and whatnot. So I started thinking about the whole concept of experimentation with images. So I was experimenting with a lot of different things, and to the point where I was starting to think about patents. Now, the reason I got involved with patents partially was because Kodak used to reward people for coming up with patents. And every time you came up with a patent, you were paid for that patent. And that depends on whether it went to an actual product or whether it became just a patent or whether it was just an idea. You would get paid accordingly. So I started thinking of a lot of different things. One of the things that I was interested in was how people were using film cameras versus how people might use digital cameras. And what I found was that film cameras had a lot of possibilities that digital was not able to do. One of them would be to be able to image on a curved surface, that kind of thing. And there was a slew of them that I can't remember right this second. What it did is I started watching things like Lomography. They were making cameras that were fun. They made multiple lenses. They made cameras that were just interesting to look at. The results were very toy-like.
Sure.
In a lot of cases, the Holga later. And I had a long time ago had been using Diana cameras when I was in undergraduate school. And so I started playing again with Diana cameras. I started playing with Holgas. I started playing with some of the multi-lenses cameras that Lomography was putting out. I started buying up some of the older cameras that were done in the 50s and the 60s that were kind of different. The idea was to create ideas around what these cameras were doing and why people were enjoying those kinds of that kind of photography. So I was allowed to do that, and I kind of wrote my own way through Kodak. I was allowed to come up with ideas based on my own interests. And so the book, I guess, grew out of my knowledge of a lot of that stuff. And although it doesn't include many of the real far out ideas that we came up with at Kodak, it still includes some of the things that I learned during that period. So the first book, Rethinking Digital Photography, was really about play. It's about the idea of getting involved with photography at a different level, at a sort of a basic level. And so pinhole photography, simple cameras, taking more elaborate cameras and doing things with them, and doing things like slit photography. I don't know if you know what that is.
But I don't. What is that?
Slit photography is uses a slit in front of the lens. The shutter is removed. And as the film moves past the slit, it records whatever is in front of it, but only in a single line. What happens is you pan from one place to another, and the film is passing that slit. The light creates a strip of image that can be as long as you run it through. It could be a movie if you wanted to. There was just one image that goes, shows you turning in circles 5,000 times. Mm-hmm. Or it could just be something that you could show. For instance, let's say somebody could walk around a telephone pole, mm-hmm. as you're running the slit vertically. And what happens is they look like kind of like a snake going around the pole. There's all kinds of different things you can do with that concept. So I started playing with that. A lot of it I was doing with video, a lot of it I was doing digitally. But I wanted to try to bring a lot of that film technology into the digital realm. So I began experimenting and playing. And then photography has always been a play for me. It hasn't been, it's serious play, but it's more play, it's more enjoyment than it is work. Mm-hmm. So, and I wanted to get that across to my, the people that I was writing the book about or for.
That sounds like a fantastic book.
It did really well. The book was on the Library Journal's list of 10 best books for the 2011. So it was, it did really well. Problem with that book is that the company I was with at the beginning, the first publisher, I guess they were sold to Barnes & Noble, and then somebody at Barnes & Noble decided that they weren't going to do any more photo books. So they dropped all of the books that were photo books at the time. So there's some 40-some authors that were just dropped like like a brick. What happened is the book kind of didn't get any more marketing. I mean, although I still continued to do a little bit on my Facebook page and also on my blog, it lost the kind of marketing that a publisher needs to put into a book. But everybody that has the book loves it. And I put my heart into both books, actually. So they're, I just wanted to open the door to people to play and to experiment. What I found was that people were shooting pictures and all of the pictures started looking the same. Photography is really about being creative, being self-motivated to make images. There's a word for that, self-expression. The idea to self-express to me is one that means that you see things your own way and produce images your own way. And that becomes then you in terms of a visual reference of who you are. So it's, what you choose, what you think about, all of those things should come into play. And what I see happening all over the place is that people tend to go out and they look at the pictures or the tutorials or whatever they find, and they want to duplicate that. That's not really photography to me. I mean, photography is seeing the world the way you see the world, and seeing the world in a particular way based on your perspective, what you know, and asking questions because you don't know everything. And it's a matter of looking and thinking, well, that's interesting, and maybe if I take a picture, I can learn something by doing that. You know, the idea of play and thinking about what you're doing and being creative, all of that stuff, I think, was important to writing a book.
Well, let's talk about your current book, Focus in Photography. And I wanted to connect it to what you were just talking about, or make a connection, I should say, between something that I read in your book and what you were talking about, how in relation to how you see people using photography. But there was one sentence that caught my eye, or one, it was maybe a question and a phrase afterwards. It was about creativity. And I wanted to ask you, what to you is creativity?
Well, I guess first of all, I think creativity is something that you do as an artist, at least. You do because you have a sense of the world around you and the materials that you have at your disposal to create something that's kind of unique, that's yours. But also, I think that it's important that the piece of work has some message, some meaning, something to, to make people want to look, but also something they can learn from.
What is you talked, about your history in relation to Kodak, so your kind of professional life. What about your creative life? So we're kind of deviating from actually talking about the book right now, which we will get back to. But
okay.
But what about your creative work and your development as a fine art photographer?
You know, I think when I was younger, I wanted to draw and paint and do that kinds of things. But when you're young, you don't really understand what the purpose is. You just like the fact that you can draw. You like the fact that you can paint. I didn't really get into photography until after I was in the service. I went to Vietnam in the I'll give away my age in the late 60s. And while I was over there, I picked up a camera in the Philippines and bought a couple of lenses in Hong Kong and Tokyo and began shooting pictures. And I enjoyed doing it, but I didn't really know much about photography at all. I have some images probably that I took at that point in time that I could print, and they might be art now. I don't know. But they, they were nice images because I took my painting skills, my drawing skills into my photograph ability, or my ability to photograph.
So does that mean that you became very attuned to things like light and shadow and...
I think more so later, but yeah, mm-hmm. color at the time I was using slide film when I was overseas. And, but I used photography, I guess, to get my head out, refocused from what was happening in the war. So, and then when I got back, I wasn't that serious, but I did keep shooting pictures. And it wasn't until I went to university and so I took classes with, I was interested in art. So I wanted to be a painter. And when I was in art school, I took classes in photography and started getting an interest in photography. I was studying under Oscar Bailey, but he was the person who introduced us to people like Rauschenberg and people like Friedlander and Gary Winogrand and those kinds of people. So, and also Betty Hahn. I mean, basically opened the door to everybody. There was Jerry Uelsman and, I can't go down the list right now, but they were all the people who were doing amazing work back in that period. The work is still amazing. Nathan Lyons was somebody he also introduced me to. So, and it was at that point during my undergraduate that a few friends and I went to New York City to have a look at some of the shows that were there at the time. I think we actually went to a Rauschenberg opening and we went to a couple of other places and ended up actually in Rochester, New York at the Visual Studies Workshop. The Visual Studies Workshop back in the 60s and the town of Rochester, the city of Rochester, at that point was sort of the center of the world as far as photography went. Rochester Institute of Technology here, there was Kodak, there was Visual Studies, which Nathan had just started a few years prior. Mm-hmm. There was the Eastman House, which is, back in the day was called the Eastman House. Currently, it's called the George Eastman Museum. And back at that point, we were in Rochester at the same time that the SPE meeting was happening at the George Eastman House. So there were tons of people here at that period of time. I mean, just about anybody who was anybody photographically at that time was in Rochester for the SPE meeting. Mm-hmm. Now, the SPE meeting the SPE is the Society for Photographic Education, which is a group that Nathan helped to start back in the early, late 60s. Mm-hmm. Do you know who Nathan Lyons is?
I do. Yes. Okay. I know he recently passed away as well.
He did. Yes. Mm-hmm. And actually, the last few years of before he died, I was working with him and printing a lot of his images. He had started, let me say that he asked me to help him learn digital photography. Nathan's work prior to that was all black and white. Wow. And all his books were done in black and white, but he wanted to learn color and here's the 80-year-old man at the time, mm-hmm. Basically starting off with color and digital. And but he enjoyed it. He thought it was great. He was intrigued by the whole process. He couldn't believe how many pictures he was taking when he went out shooting. But he couldn't believe the quality he could get out of an image and the consistency mm-hmm. from one image to the next using something like Lightroom. And so he was pretty happy, mm-hmm. Before he died. But I was working in his office in his home, and he and I became good friends and probably a highlight of my life.
That's wonderful.
I'm quite happy that I could help him and that he did what he wanted to do right up until the end. So that mm-hmm. was great.
Mm-hmm. That's wonderful. That's so really wonderful.
I may have missed your question.
No. I mean, I got a good sense of your kind of where you came from, mm-hmm. of what are some of the forces that influenced you? Right. And so all the way, I should say all the way through, that's such a weird phrase, but you've consistently been kind of engaged in your fine artwork.
Correct. I've been, I've never given up on my artwork. Even when I was at Kodak, I was doing my own work, but also reinforced a little bit by the things I was doing at Kodak. like learning 3D photography, or sorry, 3D imaging, if you know what I mean by 3D imaging. I'm not talking about stereo 3D, like, you know, you see things in with depth, but I'm talking about the stuff they do with, for the movies, all that stuff where they build characters and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Kodak sent me to school to learn that sort of thing. They bought me some synthesizers so I could play with music.
Wow.
So I had an office. It was a cubicle, but it was a different kind of cubicle. Mm-hmm. It was, you know, I had one of those domes over my head so that I could listen to what I was kind of keying away on the keyboard while everybody else around me was typing on typewriters. It doesn't go back that far. But
did you ever go to RIT and see Andrew David Hazy's office?
Yeah. Yeah.
Was it like,
yeah,
was
yeah.
your was
no,
your
I know Andrew David Hazy, and he knows me, and we worked together for a while because I taught at RIT for a while.
Was your cubicle like his office?
My current office is like his office, but yeah, my cubicle, my managers were always coming by and say, clean this place up. And but you know, I have a book somewhere around here, and it's called Imagination's Chamber. And the book is really about all of these artists, and it's a photographs of their workplaces. And their workplaces were, you know, everything's piled in the corners, everything's in chaos. And I find myself that chaos is something I like to work out of. And so I'm happy in that kind of environment.
That's very interesting. Very interesting.
But unlike some people, I mean, Nathan was, I don't want to say it, but he had everything in order. And I don't know if he ever appreciated my dislike for order.
What is it about order that
I just
doesn't work for you, I guess, creatively?
Oh, I just never grew up with order in my life.
Yeah.
So
it's a familiarity thing then.
Yeah, it has to do with that's just who I am, what I do. I mean, you know, I mean, we keep the house in good shape, but my office, if I took a picture and sent it to you, you would try to, you'd have trouble finding me in the picture.
Yeah. Well, I admire that's an environment that you can be creative in. That's not my inclination at all.
Yeah.
Admirable.
I like going out into the world and finding chaos. And somebody not long ago said that what they do with pictures is they go out in the world and they take chaos and they try to make it into something. They try to make order out of chaos.
Sure.
And I thought that was an odd thing to say, because I like chaos for what it is. I like to show how chaos works, or how it appears to me. You know, to me, nature is made up of things that fall from trees, and they don't necessarily, you know, stack up in a certain way when they land. Mm-hmm. All that kind of stuff. You know, the nature of the world is made up of. To me, it's all about fractals. The world is kind of like, you know, if you look at how fractals are formed, then you look how cells are formed, or you look how other things are formed, you start to see a world that is made up of energy and fractals and things like that.
And do you think you're, I'm sorry, go ahead.
That's all right. I mean, to me, you might say that's an order, but it's also chaotic.
Right. I think there's order at one level and chaos at another.
Yeah. But my room is definitely chaos. And I have a smaller space than I used to have. I used to have a big and very chaotic space where I used to live. But this one is, it's comfortable. It's small, but it works. But everything's stacked up in corners and whatnot. So.
Wow.
Now,
go ahead.
Go ahead.
Well, I thought we could talk a little bit. So, kind of returning to your book, because we didn't quite make it there yet.
I know. Well, I tend to go off on tangents, and I'm sorry.
Oh no, apologies necessary. So your book is specifically about what?
And we're talking about the new book. Which
your
is
new focused. Book. Yes, yeah. Your new book, Focus on Photography.
And I need to focus on that, don't I? Mm-hmm. So it's really about the idea of using all of the things that are available to a user that most people don't understand about lenses and focus, about looking at the other possibilities besides just getting a sharp picture. So in that sense, it's really about looking at what depth of field is, looking at how do you use such things as the hyperfocal distance. A lot of people don't understand what those two things are. Many people who have simple cameras, point and shoot digital cameras, they don't really understand what an aperture is. It's something that, you know, they hear, but you can't even see it because when you look down the lens, you don't even see one on many cameras. And so I wanted to talk about that. And certainly on a cell phone, the camera is so small that we don't really see the mechanism. And I wanted to talk about how those things work and what the camera is doing for you when you're using it in, let's say, an automatic mode or whatever, versus how you would use it if you were to make the settings yourself. And I think that, you know, once people start to learn those things, they start to realize, well, geez, I can have more control over how the image is going to look and what I'm going to include and what I don't want to include as sharp information. And so at first it was a little iffy whether I should do a book just on focus. And I wasn't sure that I would have enough material to cover what, that kind of subject. But after thinking about it and looking at, you know, focus is one of the major tools that people have in making a photograph, work. Mm-hmm. So I started thinking about all these different things that I learned and all these things that I knew and started putting them together and writing them up. And I came up with a 300-page book, which they had to whittle down to 176 pages. So I had quite a bit of material and I had more images than you'll ever see that I sent to the publishers, and they whittled it all down to I've never counted how many images, but the ones that are actually in the book are far less than what I sent them. Mm-hmm. But that's because, when you're writing a book, you tend to come up with new ideas. You tend to take older ideas and elaborate a little bit more. You tend to do, you throw in new concepts. And so over a period of time, that last book took me, it didn't take me that long to really write it, but it took about 6 years to put it, to finally get it published, printed.
Wow.
So, yeah.
That's a very long process. For something that I think, now that I've spent a good deal of time with the book, for something that seems like absolutely essential, it feels to me like a book like this should have existed a long time ago.
I started looking, and there really aren't books that are strictly about focus that you'll be able to find. And so that was one of the reasons why at first we thought, or I thought, that maybe it's not, maybe we need to elaborate, go into other areas within the book. And I think in some ways I have touched on things because focus is related to some of the other concepts that I talked about. Like for instance, I talk about panoramas, making panoramas. And it's nowadays it's pretty easy with an iPhone, just sort of scan a scene and you've got a panorama. But what if you wanted to blow that up as big as a wall, and you wanted to control it and you wanted to do other things? Well, there's software out there that allows you to do certain things. There's techniques involved, and there's also focus, which has to be at a point where when you go from one place to another, you have to make sure that the focus points are right and that the overlap is right and various other things. Mm-hmm. So that's just one thing that where I took the book a little bit to off might seem a little off topic, but it's not.
Mm-hmm. No, it sounds very related, as you as you say. Was it a was this book a hard sell to publishers?
I don't know. I had a really great editor at my first publishing house, and when they when Barnes & Noble decided to rid themselves of photographers, they she ended up with a company out of London. Actually, they were in they were outside of London, south of London. I can't think of the name of the town right now, but they were down there, and it was a small company called Ilex, and they produced a magazine at the time called Photographer's Eye, or it might have been called The Photographer's Eye. And she had asked me if I would mind doing a small article they were going to do electronically. And in fact, the magazine is just electronic. And so I said, sure, and ended up doing something on TTV. Do you know what TTV photography is?
No, I don't.
Okay, well, TT photography, which I talked about in the first book, is where you take a camera. You actually need two cameras, one camera to shoot through the viewfinder of another camera. And the results are actually pretty interesting. You would think, well, geez, it's going to be kind of blurry. It's going to be this, it's going to be that. But what happens is that you've got an effect that is very interesting, kind of like a Diana look, kind of like a Holga look, kind of like, whatever. But so I did a, and what you do usually is you make a device, and the device is usually camera number one, which is going to be the viewfinder, and camera number two is the taking camera. And you put them in such a position, hold them in such a position that you're shooting one, shooting a picture of the viewfinder of the
first camera.
The first camera. So
while we were talking, I had to look up TTV photography, which stands for through the viewfinder, of course.
Exactly. Yep.
And it's amazing how much the quality of the image, and whether that these may be filtered. I haven't spent a lot of time, of course, investigating.
Well, I mean, you can always do that. I mean, I have a tendency to take everything into Photoshop and kind of rework it a little bit, you know. So, but that's just because I'm a digital photographer. But I spent years and years and years as a film photographer, and I still have film cameras and I still like shooting film. I just don't have a dark room at the moment. Although Nathan has offered, he offered his darkroom to me while I was working with him, and I never got a chance to actually do that. Joan, his wife, said that I can use it anytime, but I feel funny.
Are you working on another book right now? What is it? What's occupying your creative life right now?
I'm looking at another book. I don't want to give it away yet, but that seems like. Seems like that's my thing now, is just writing books. And they like the ideas that I've got, but what they do in publishing houses is they'll run a book to see how well it does before they give you another one. So it's a waiting game. But I think that soon I'll probably pick up another book, maybe two. I've got three or four ideas on that are waiting. But the area that I really want to work with is photo books, like, my artwork. So I want to do that. But again, that's it's time consuming and also costs money to produce a book. And both of those things are, hard to come by. But, I probably got about six or seven different photo books that I've kind of run through InDesign. So they're all kind of laid out, ready to go. I just don't have the money right at the moment to do a production. You're talking thousands of dollars worth of printing, and then the marketing and all of that kind of stuff that goes with it. I'm not a marketer, so really, when I started, you just made images, and right. Lucky to maybe show here or show there, which I've been lucky enough to have a few shows, but. Teaching was the way to make a living. So for a number of years, I worked as an adjunct. And if you've ever done adjunct work, then you realize that, it's probably not going to be something you're going to do the rest of your life. And so I ended up at Kodak because I needed to make a living. By the way, I don't know if you know that this weekend is Worldwide Pinhole Photography Day. And it happens on Sunday. And it happens every year. And, you know, a good chunk of what you see on there is just what you would expect to see from a pinhole camera. But what I've been trying to do is to get people to use information that they may find online or in my books to be more creative with what they do with pinhole photography. So in the first book, what I did was I introduced ideas around using paint programs to make pinhole images more interesting. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the hardcore pinholers would probably balk at me even saying that, but I like to take things a little further and try to work with things in my own way.
What will you do on Worldwide Pinhole Photography Day?
First of all, I usually make a poster every year. I've been doing it for about 15 years, and I do it because it gets me back into the basics. But most of what I do is digital, and again, real pinholers, as they call themselves, and they tend to balk at anything that's not straight pinhole photography. But I use various pinhole-related devices. I use pinholes, but I also use something called a zone plate, and I also use something called a zone sieve or sieve. It's basically a series of holes. They're about the same size as a pinhole, but they actually, because they're of the way they're produced, they can actually focus, and so you end up with a piece of film, basically, that has these holes, let's say an opaque piece of film, that has these tiny holes that kind of look like, circles made of dots. And but that's where the light goes through. And as the light goes through those edges, it bends down to a focal point. And what happens then is you end up with a picture that's kind of hazy, in some ways kind of pinhole-y, but also has a focus, and they're very interesting. So I talk about that in my book.
Mm-hmm. And that's something, say, on this Sunday, World Pinhole Photography Day, will you be working with that and making an image that way?
That's something I do every year. So, you know, there's, it's a little thing. You're only allowed to put one image up, but you know, what's interesting is you get all these people from countries you've never heard of. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if Donald Trump did it, he'd probably have a good time.
there's your one Trump reference. In the most unlikely of places.
Yeah.
Talking about
pinhole photography. He's a bit of a pinhead, if you know what I mean. So, but that's the other name we call ourselves, is pinheads.
I see. I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's a little tidbit.
Where can people find your book, Focus in Photography, if they wanted to purchase it?
Well, I talk about it a fair amount on my blog, which is www.lensgarden, one word, .com. And there's also, I think on the first page, there's a couple of menu items for both books. And under there, I talk a little bit about them. There's a list of comments that I've had about the books, and also the links that you can use to get to the book site. So the book sales, like on Amazon and whatnot.
Great.
So you could start selling them for me.
No, thank you. I mean, I'm doing my part by talking with you right now.
You're doing a great thing. That's what this is about.
Right, exactly.
I appreciate it. But you can cut that out.
I will. well, I'm sorry. I was going to say something. What's up?
I missed a whole slew of things that I wanted to talk about, but maybe we can, we can do it if you want, or we can stop here.
If you want to, talk, go ahead. You can continue because I have the time, and you have the time too. So.
Yeah, we both have the time, and you have the means to
record and disperse and edit.
And edit. That's what I was heading for. Mm-hmm. So, but, you know, I think one of the things that I was doing, I lived in Canada for about 20 years, And I belonged to a group up there called the Toronto Photographers Workshop. And I was teaching at a place called Sheridan College. And I taught some other things. And but I also wanted to go to grad school. I felt like the only thing that I could do to really advance myself properly was to go and get a master's degree. And there was really nothing available in Canada at that particular time. So I ended up saying, okay, I'm going to go back to the Visual Studies Workshop, which I visited back in the, 70s. And I decided that I wanted to go back to work under Nathan. And I was lucky enough to actually get to do that. And so I went back to the Visual Studies. I moved here in 1989. And started working on my master's degree. And I think it was one of the better things that I've done in my life, because even though the thing about the workshop is that you learn from scratch. I mean, a lot of the things you learned, it was because you took the initiative to learn it. That you were interested in, let's say, digital, you would go and learn digital. Or if you wanted to spend your whole time there doing 11x14 camera images or something, you could do that. But the other thing it did is it opened me up to thinking about visual imaging, not necessarily always about photography, but thinking in terms of books and other ways like video and graphic arts and whatnot as a form of medium. But also it allowed you to think differently about what you were producing. Mm-hmm. And so it opened the doors to a lot of things. I had already been introduced to, actually, while I was going to visual studies, I was also working at LVT. And so I was starting to learn about the technology. And during that time, I decided I was going to do my thesis doing digital photography. And I think I have credit for being the first grad student at Digital Studies to have a completely digital thesis. And I had a show at the workshop. I had my thesis talk on a show at Rochester Institute of Technology at the same time. Both of them were considered part of my thesis. And I don't know if you know who Roger Burton was.
I don't.
But he was also... Mm-hmm. Some of those people that I was introduced to back in the day. But he was a photographer. He's passed away since, but he was my thesis advisor. And John Wood was another person that I worked with at Visual Studies. Visual Studies, especially under Nathan, I got a chance to learn quite a bit about the history and the people that were involved with photography at that time. And to me, there's a distinction between people who are photographing flowers and that kind of thing, and then people who are interested in photography the way I think you and I are.
What was your thesis on?
Thesis was landscape. And I was one of the things about living in Rochester is that at the time, especially, there were a lot of places that you could go to look at work. And so the Eastman House was one of the places that I would see work. And I was really inspired by some of the things that were happening by Civil War photographers and photographers of the American West during, especially up in the Northwest. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I got to do with was work on a project with Frank Golke and a couple of other photographers at for a show called the what did they call it? It was something about the Northwest, but it was about the timber industry and about deforestation. And I was really impressed with a guy by the name of Darius Hines.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you know who that is, but the early photographer of
deforestation.
Deforestation, in that they, he photographed people removing, sawing down the great big trees in the Northwest, that kind of thing. Then Frank Golke's work was about Mount St. Helens. Mm-hmm. And about the devastation caused by the natural occurring devastation. That was an interesting show. And so I got to do that kind of thing. Anyway, I had a lot of great experience. My thesis work, to get back to that, mm-hmm. was a landscape, but more on a more modern version. And I was doing mostly black and white, but I was shooting black and white, mostly Type 55 film, the Polaroid film. Mm-hmm. That was probably my favorite film of all time. And what I was shooting were panoramas, where I'd have two or three images side by side that represented a panorama. They weren't physically connected like you would do it today, but they were set apart. And a lot of that came out of work that I saw from, I think it might've been Gardner, one of the photographers but large prints. So I did large prints, but I printed them on color paper. And what was interesting to me was that, again, it had a lot to do with my playing. It had to do with creating images that were together, but then also separated by a slight difference in color. So one print would have a bluish cast, one print would have a pinkish cast, one print would have a yellow cast, but it worked. So I would do things like take the landscape and I would wrap it around a wall so that, you know, have an image on one side and then continue on the next wall and then maybe continue on the next wall. So it would be one landscape but seen from different perspectives, I guess, within the gallery.
John, thank you so much for talking with me. That was really a real pleasure. I honestly wish I had more time to talk because you have such a long and varied story, and I learned a lot from this conversation. So I really appreciate it.
That was John Neal and I discussing his new book, Focus in Photography, Master the Advanced Techniques That Will Change Your Photography Forever, which was published by Ilex Press. In the next episode of New Books in Photography, I'll talk with photographer and anthropologist Liliana Caruana about her book, Rebels, Punks and Skinheads of New York's East Village. New Books in Photography podcasts are hosted remotely by me, Lorena Turner, and also edited by me. If you have a new book of photography or a photography-related book coming out and would like to talk with me about your book for about an hour, please send me a message through the New Books in Photography Facebook page. This goes for monographs, theoretical texts, as well as books on the history of photography.